It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to the landmark 75th episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. I'm so glad you're listening. And the reason is because I have a wonderful interview with Grace Randolph, creator of Superbia for Boom Studios. One of the reasons I'm so happy about this is the first time in 75 episodes I've had the opportunity to interview a female creator, a woman in comics. So I'm very excited about that and very happy. And I think you'll enjoy my interview with her. We talk a lot about women in comics, about Superbia, and many other things. So I think you'll really enjoy it. Then I review this week's comics, and everything wraps up with Gianluca Glazer joining me for the latest news and previews. I can't wait to share my interview with Grace with you, so let's get on with the show. It's a pleasure today to talk with Grace Randolph, comics creator of such good things as Justice League Unlimited, The Muppet Peter Pan, and most recently, Superbia from Boom Studios. How are you doing today, Grace?
Very good. It's a Wednesday. It's comic book day, so I'm awesome.
Yeah, I've got a stack waiting for me to get to, so I'll get to that once we get done here. But it's great to talk with you. One of the things I wanted to say, how great it is to talk with you as a woman comics creator. You're a member of a rare and wonderful breed, and so it's great to be able to talk with you.
Thanks. And I think that every creator, especially as the independent comic books become more and more popular, and even sometimes are rivaling the big two, I mean, I'm really impressed with the sales for Brian K. Vaughan's Saga. I think that more and more women hopefully will be getting into it because it's just a really exciting area.
Mm-hmm. Now, this perfect dovetail into Superbia. Do you want to talk a little bit about how you came up with the concept for Superbia?
Oh, sure. The thing is that I've been trying to get a creator-owned book for a couple of years now, even before I had pitched Superbia. And it was really hard because not only do you have to get an idea that you're passionate about, but it has to click with the publisher, and the publisher has to feel that there's a place for it in the market. I think that's something you have to really think about. Just don't think about an idea that you think is great or you would like to read, but you have to think of the business aspects of it as well. So I'd had a couple of different ideas, and I frustratingly kept coming up short, despite going to all the conventions, which was, I think, really, really key to do that, just to go in there and make the connections and mingle. But it was right before New York Comic Con, and I had a meeting all set up with Matt Gagnon over at Boom Studios to pitch some ideas, and I had a bunch ready. But my sister and my mom were like, oh, you want to watch this preview of this new Real Housewives of Beverly Hills? And I was like, oh, that seems horrible, but I'll try it, and because you guys are watching it. And I actually kind of thought it was really interesting. And then they had commercials during the preview, and they showed all the different cities. And I was like, wow, every city makes for such a different series, different feel. Wouldn't it be funny if they had, like, the Real Housewives of some superheroes? And so that's where the idea came from.
Wow, that's great, Jess. And this is where I think you as a woman can approach things differently than, say, a guy like me would. Because, you know, you couldn't pay me to watch the Real Housewives.
I don't know. I know a lot of guys who have their favorite Real Housewives show.
Okay, well, unfortunately, that's not mine, unfortunately. But I just got a kick out of it because I just think this is the greatest thing. Because there's certain people who come up with great ideas. There's a guy from England called Cy Dutton, and he came up with a comic book by watching how they slaughtered pigs one day.
Oh, that's fascinating.
And I was like, how did you ever think of that? Because, you know, I would watch that and never think about creating a comic story out of it. And I guess this is kind of the same thing with this, in the sense that you watch this and you got a comic concept out of it. I think that's just a cool thing. That's how great concepts are born, I think, is people who have a unique perspective can actually look at it and see something different and unique in it.
I think that's a really good comment. And I think that that's good advice for anybody out there, any aspiring creators coming up with their own ideas. Don't just look to what's on the shelves at your local comic book store, but go into real life and try and find something.
Now, I have to say there's a lot of fun involved in Superbia in the sense that you do allude to certain superhero standards.
Yeah.
Shall we say.
Oh, I would like to say first off that I'm really glad that even though no one could pay you enough money to watch Real Housewives, that you still picked up Superbia and you enjoyed it. Because I would like to add that even though it's inspired by that, it's not like a Real Housewives show. I tried really hard to make it a superhero comic.
Mm-hmm. I bought all the miniseries, and I was really happy to hear that it's a regular comic. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
A real wonderful accomplishment. But I some of the things that made me smile when I read the book is, for example, the group they belong to is the Meta Legion. And when they are about to go into action, they say, Meta Legion engage. And that made me smile because that reminds me of some other group that I won't mention here. But and some of the characters remind me, they do have certain allusions to other famous characters. And, of course, you can't possibly get away with using any of those. But you turn these characters into their own people, which I really like Sovereign, for example, who is very much what I imagine a real-life superpowered guy would be like.
I'm glad you feel that way. You know, I took characters that I enjoy reading. I mean, I enjoy mainstream comic books quite a bit. But recently I've been a little frustrated, or I feel the characters can't develop further because of the constraints of being part of a major corporation or having movies based on them. They either can't evolve because they've hit a wall creatively, or because the company just can't do certain things because it would upset the powers that be. Mm-hmm. I really wanted, because I think every reader feels this way, I wanted to take these popular iconic characters and be like, all bets are off. You can do anything you want with them. And also, as some people have correctly noted, Superbia has a very large cast. So, you know, I don't want to sit there and to have all this exposition of not only establishing the supporting characters, but also a whole new team of superheroes. I just don't think it would resonate as much, or you wouldn't be able to dive into the story as quickly.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, one of the things that makes your book stand out from other comics is the fact that we're actually getting to see superheroes married to, you know, quote unquote, real women. And I found that really interesting because you don't see that happen a lot in the comics. I mean, Superman was married to Lois Lane for a while, and now they've revamped that whole thing. That doesn't exist. Hank Pym was married to Janet Van Dyne, and now she's dead, and all these things go on and on. So it's interesting to see an actual married family, you know, married life going on with superheroes. And I think that's one of the things about your books that makes it stand out and makes it a little different from everybody else.
Oh, I'm really glad you feel that way. You know, one of the things I've been saying about the comic is that one way to really get a different perspective on a person, and sometimes an unexpected one, is to see who they end up sharing their life with, because that's a choice. So I think it just says so much about them, about that who they choose. And also, I also had to think about who would these people realistically meet? Because you don't meet your soulmate. You don't meet the perfect person for you. It's like, who would you come in contact with? And so that was another angle of what I was doing. And so I'm really glad you like that. And also, I feel that even when superheroes in mainstream comics aren't dating or married to a civilian, you don't ever see them, you don't see that civilian side of things. They seem to just go into a nice little box whenever the superhero doesn't need them anymore.
Mm-hmm. Now, since we saw this in the miniseries, I was interested to talk a little bit of Omar about Sovereign. I think his wife's name is Eve, right?
Oh, no, that's Bulldog's wife is Eve.
Oh,
Sovereign,
okay.
Is actually not married, but has the live-in girlfriend of Helen, who is a supervillain.
That's right. There was a confrontation between the two of them that I found really interesting, in the sense that, you know, Sovereign basically tells her, this is your place and you're going to stay in there, which I'm sure is going to lead to interesting things as we move forward with that, because I've never known a guy to be able to get away with that with a woman.
That's hilarious.
So I'm going to be fascinated to see what happens as they go forward.
That's really funny. Well, actually, I'm glad that you were interested in that relationship, because the second arc or the first arc of the ongoing focuses on Helen. And the fact that, you know, Sovereign can get away with that kind of talk a little bit because he's really given her a get-out-of-jail-free card. And so she just can't leave, because if anyone were to spot her, she'd either have to go back to her old ways as being a supervillain and she's trying to reform, or she would be thrown in prison. Yeah. So it's really seeing her chafe under that. And also Sovereign's ex-girlfriend, Haley Harper, who's a reporter, is really obsessed with finding out where Hella Hart is and why she's not in jail.
Interesting. So we've got a lot of things. You planted a lot of seeds in the initial miniseries. Was that intentional? Did you have a good idea where you wanted to go and you were just trying to set things up in the miniseries?
Yeah. You know, I think like any creator, I really hoped that it would become an ongoing. You know, you really hope that readers are interested enough in the story you're telling that they want to keep going with it. And so I'm really happy that it's going to be an ongoing. That's totally thanks to the people who have not only purchased Superbia, but a lot of times hunted it down because a lot of stores didn't order it. So, you know, it wasn't easy to get their hands on. So that really means a lot. If it didn't get picked up, there were just going to be loose ends, because I'm trying to make this as realistic as possible, and things in real life don't tie up in neat little bows.
That's interesting, because being a part of Boom is an advantage and a disadvantage, because you get to do things you can't do in other companies. But like you mentioned, sometimes I find it very difficult to get get certain issues of Boom Studio Comics. Mm-hmm. And so that makes it difficult for me. Sometimes I've had to drive miles to go to a different store just to be able to get the final issue of a miniseries that I really wanted. And it's kind of sad to me that that happens with Boom. I wish people ordered Boom more. I'm a big fan of Boom Studios, and I love the product. I buy almost everything that Boom
makes. That's wonderful. Well, Boom is so wonderful because they will let you do what you want. I mean, Boom Editorial has been extremely supportive. They let me do what I want, but they really are a guiding force. And, you know, they always say, we're going to put on our publisher's hat. And they really do help shape the comic in that way, which is wonderful. And I see what you're saying. And I think it's unfortunate. I think Superbia, not only in being a Boom book, but I think that being a book with a lot of female characters in it, I think unfortunately, a lot of comic book stores are like, no, we're not going to buy this. They don't have faith in their customers, which is unfortunate.
Mm-hmm. Now, why don't we run down the characters from Superbia in case somebody hasn't had a chance to pick it up?
Oh, right.
As far as the heroes go, let's go down. You've got Sovereign, who we've talked about. Mm-hmm. Who are the other heroes that are part of the Meta Legion?
Okay, well, you have Sovereign. You also have the leader, who was Marine Omega. And then he had his second-in-command, or sidekick, as he's called in a derogatory sense, is Bulldog. And that was the first miniseries, was Bulldog and his wife Eve coming to live with the Meta Legion in their compound because Marine Omega was sick. So, you know, pick up the first miniseries to catch up on that. So that's what's happening there. Then there's also Batu, which is one of the tribe members of the Daughters of Brightmoon.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's Dion, which is from the Cosmic Core, and he has kind of like an energy power that he commands and also almost takes over his whole life. And then there's also Night Fox, who was teamed up with Agent Twilight, who he's having an affair with, actually.
Interesting. Okay, now, the women, the wives, I find it interesting that in the book it seems like the guys are the superpowered ones and the women are not. It's almost like the women are already super characters. They don't need a superpower.
Well, you know, I tried to strike a balance there. Most of the superheroes in comics are male. You have Batu. She's the one female superhero. And so I think it's very interesting to meet her husband, Jeremy, and how he deals with that. I also wanted to pick somebody with Jeremy who would not be off-put by her dismissive attitude towards men. A lot of times they pair up that kind of a woman with like a tough guy or a military guy. And I just don't think that he would be willing to put up in the long term with somebody who thought that women were superior to men. He's an explorer and a writer, a novelist about his explorations, and he also studies culture. So he finds her very interesting. He's able to remove himself from that. So that's the husband. And then there's also Eve, who's married to Bulldog. She's a nurse who he met because he had to go to the hospital all the time, so she discovered his secret identity. Then there is Ruth, who's married to the original Marine Omega, and she's kind of like the first lady of superheroes. Mm-hmm. Then there's Helen, who is a semi-reformed supervillain who's living with Sovereign secretly. Mm-hmm. And then also there's Alexis, who is married to Night Fox, and they kind of have a very cold relationship, and Alexis runs his company and also helps manage the Night Fox operations. And I think also Geo, Agent Twilight, is kind of a de facto member of the housewife spouse group. He's having an affair, as I said, with Night Fox. I really wanted to portray that. A lot of times people portray gay relationships between superheroes as sometimes predatory, like a child, inappropriate age range. And I really wanted to show like an actual romance mm-hmm. that was consensual.
Okay. Now, my understanding is going forward, we're going to meet some new characters.
Yes, yes. As you can see, it's a very big cast. but I think that one of the things I'm proud of and one of the great things about artist Russell Donnerman is he's able to distinguish characters, so you can have so many characters. But there's also the children. There's Eli and Sarah, which are the children of Batu and Jeremy, and there's Zari, also there's Tia. Tia is another housewife. She's a retired superhero, so you're going to see her really having a difficult time with not being in the spotlight anymore in the first arc of the ongoing. I'm really trying to build up the character of Tia. I think she's really great, and going forward, you're actually going to meet her superhero identity. So the new characters, well, you'll be meeting Tia's superhero identity. You're also going to have Hector Hunt play a larger role. He's Helen's ex-boyfriend. He's a major supervillain. He's Sovereign's, like, arch-enemy. And also there's Haley Harper, who is going to be really coming after Sovereign and Hela. And we're also going to be going to Mongolia, so you'll be meeting the Daughters of Brightmoon Tribe.
Interesting. So you've got a lot of stories to tell.
Yeah, I really wanted to keep things rooted in this cul-de-sac where they all live and the little community they've created. But I also wanted to break free of that. I wanted to explore different things, you know, with Alexis in the city or Mongolia with Batu.
Mm-hmm. Now, is the miniseries out in a trade form?
It will come out, you know, every four issues or a trade. And the great thing is when the first of the ongoing comes out, you can buy the trade of the limited series. So you can read it all the way through and then find out what's happening immediately. And then every four issues is like a trade, a standalone story.
Oh, that's great. So people can jump right in and know exactly what's going on by the end of the first issue. That's
Yeah, and we're going to also have like a catch-up dialogue to catch you up, you know, in the beginning of each issue. Just so you know, we want to make it really reader-friendly.
Mm-hmm. Now, is your artist following with you? Is that Russell Dauterman, or is he the new
Russell
artist?
Russell Dauterman will be continuing, and I'm really thrilled about that. Russell cares so much about the characters and the project. He puts a lot of effort into it. It's not one of those comics that doesn't have a lot of detail work. I mean, he really does a great job creating these worlds that the characters inhabit, which I think is wonderful. And also, he's really great at expressions. One of the things we've talked about is I'm not big on like characters saying everything they're thinking, because nobody does that in real life. I don't like inner monologues either, because I think that you don't have those on television, and it's very compelling that way. So it's very important to often really crucial story beat or emotion just visually, and Russell does a fantastic job with that.
Yeah, I agree with you. And comics are a visual medium in many ways. You know, you get some dialogue. Now, it's like having a television show where you have a lot of dialogue going on. It can get kind of boring after a while when you want to see something happen.
Oh, totally. Nothing I hate more than turning a page of a comic and just seeing a wall of dialogue or a wall of caption boxes. I will often skim those. And I don't want anybody skimming Superbia.
Oh, it's, don't tell anybody, but I do that too. I used to watch Smallville, and I had a habit on that show because there was a lot of discussion happening. I would always fast forward through the dialogue parts, and when something started to happen, I would slow down and watch what was going on because I couldn't care less what they were discussing.
Yeah.
And because like three quarters of the show was dialogue, and that used to always drive me crazy.
Oh, my goodness. Well, they do that on a television show because they can't afford more action. That's frustrating. Yeah. Because you're like, I know why you're doing this. It's because you can't afford action.
So you have an unlimited budget in a comic. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah, I can go to Mongolia. I can have dragons. I really think that's awesome.
That's fun. Very cool. So I'm looking forward to Superbia. Why don't we talk a little bit about some of the other projects you've worked on? I was interested to see that I've read a lot of your stuff. I read the Justice League Unlimited that you wrote.
Oh, good.
I also read Muppet Peter Pan, which I've liked. So there's a lot of stuff you've written that I've really liked.
Oh, I'm really happy to hear that.
I guess the thing I want to get to that I'm really interested in as a woman comics reader, I usually ask people how you got started reading comics. And I was just curious to see, how did you start reading comics? Were you younger? Were you older? How did it work?
Well, I started reading comics because my father really liked them, and him and my mother introduced me to Archie and Uncle Scrooge.
Ah.
So I was really enjoying those. But I think, like, as I always like to say, everybody reaches a point where you're like, Archie, just choose already. It just becomes really frustrating. And so I used to go to this comic book store in New Jersey, which unfortunately closed. Oh. And like every comic book store, they had this little kiddie section right near the cash register. But they also had the adult comics, you know, the Marvel and DC off to, you know, in the main part of the store. And so my eyes started to wander, and so I started picking those up. And I really liked them. I really enjoyed them a lot. And I read them for a while, and then my parents were like, you're not really going to be a comic book reader, are you? So I kind of had to give them up when I was in high school. But then when I went to film school, everybody was reading comics again. So I was like, everyone's reading them. I'm going back.
Mm-hmm. Very cool, because I had something of the same experience when I got to high school. I kind of thought, nah, I've read these. I know all this stuff already. And so I stopped. My brother kept reading. We were twins. And I got back into them when the new Teen Titans hit with Marv Wolfman and George Perez.
Oh, awesome.
And so ever since then, I was only buying a couple, and as time's gone along, I buy more and more. I'm buying more and more of the kinds of things that Superbia is. I like things that are very different. I like variety in my reading, and I enjoy my Long Johns superheroes, believe me. I buy a lot of those, but I also want to read things that are different. And that's one of the things that attracted me to your book, that it's got a very different take on superheroes. And I think that's a great thing. And I also thought in your Muppet Peter Pan was a great way to interpret a classic tale through the Muppet prism.
Well, I'm glad you feel that way, and that's all that I think any creator can ask, is that people just give their comic book a shot. And I, too, have started to read more and more independent comics. I think everybody's starting to. I think not only is it a little bit of a frustration with the big two, but I think that the smaller publishers are doing a better job of advertising. I think digital stuff helps. And also, I have a web show called Think About the Ink, which I started in December. And a lot of people have been like, you know, I give recommendations every week. So I started really taking a hard look at the other publishers. And I've been really happily surprised with what I've found. You know, I think that there's just some great work going on.
Yeah, it's like The Walking Dead. A guy that runs a store that I go to occasionally, I just one day said, look, what's good? I mean, what am I not reading that's really good? And he told me Walking Dead, and I said, oh, come on. It's just a black and white zombie book. But I got into it way before the TV show, and I was really glad. So I'm always looking for suggestions for good books and things like that. Now, I find myself, too, doing the same thing. I will seek out things. If it at all interests me or something that I think is something different, I'll be after it. So I think that's really cool.
That's wonderful.
So now the question I've got for you, though, as a woman who reads comics, who are the female superheroes or the comic characters that you like or identify with?
It's hard because a lot of the characters I like, I don't like what's happening to them right now.
Okay.
I'm a big Catwoman fan, but I was very disappointed in Catwoman Zero. I didn't like the changes made to that character, and I was really with her. I was not offended by the original stuff that Judd Winnick did with the character. I thought that actually worked for her. But Catwoman is like someone, it's a book I've always purchased that I really enjoy. I also like the Birds of Prey team quite a bit. I like Poison Ivy. I really like the Batman universe. I'm a big Batman fan. My favorites are Batman and X-Men. And I think that's interesting because I think those books, those lines have the biggest ratio of female characters.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like that stuff. I like Emma Frost. I'm a big Emma Frost fan. Those are the characters that I enjoy. I feel, as a female reader, it's frustrating. I think that when female characters get their own books, I often don't like them because I feel they make them very, I don't know, chick flick or chick lit, where they're like, oh, let's have inner monologues about feelings. And, you know, I was so disappointed when Wonder Woman had a miniseries and they were exploring her relationship with her mother. I was like, I don't understand why. It always annoys me that of the Trinity, there people are like, Batman is the policeman, Superman is the fireman, and Wonder Woman is the teacher. And I'm like, no, Wonder Woman should be the soldier of that group. And so that stuff's just tough for me.
Well, you know, it's tough for me, too, because as somebody who enjoys female characters, I really do like them a lot. Women in comics are kind of boiled down to certain stereotypes, and it drives me nuts. And this is why I'm always after female characters who don't follow the stereotypes. But, you know, I have to say television does just the same thing.
No, it does. Yeah, and movies do the same thing. And that's another reason I wanted to write Superbia, because I really wanted to write a group of women who have deep flaws, whose lives didn't revolve around who they were dating, who they were married to. I mean, of course, that's important. That's a big factor. I really want them to have their own personalities and a lot of depth, and I hope people feel that that's achieved with Superbia.
Well, I like that, too. You know, one of the things that a woman, especially in a lead role, is limited in what they can do, especially funny things among other women, it seems to me. And when I've talked to my friends who are women fans, like sci-fi and comics, they'll always tell me they want women to do just exactly what you're talking about, talking about their feelings, talking things out rather than using action and violence. Yeah, all my friends say that.
Are they comic book readers?
Yeah, many of them are, and they tend to like the male characters. That's the funny part that drives me crazy. But you're like yeah. It's like a show called Painkiller Jane, and they refer to her as a man with certain female appendages.
I think it's funny they say they want women characters to do one thing. That's not what they choose to read.
See, I don't get that, because, you know, men can be everything. You can be a scoundrel, you can be a scientist, you can be a superhero, you can do everything. But women seem to be very tightly defined into narrow roles, and I don't get that. I know a lot of women are very different from each other, and to say that especially a lead character has to be only one kind of woman, I'm just curious what your feeling is about that.
I find it incredibly frustrating. I think that I was just talking about this actually on my show this week, Think About the Ink, about how I really disliked Jean Grey, because I thought she was just so one note, and she was just a fantasy of this girl next door. And I mean, maybe your people are girls next doors when they're teenagers, but no one can stay that. I mean, time and experience changes people. And I really don't like this idea, this softer sex, you know, that whole idea. Women are just as diverse and wonderful or horrible as men. And that's important to show.
So you're giving me courage here, because, you know, I literally talk to my friends and I say to them, you know, how come you only want it that one way? And what they say to me is that they think that's the ultimate woman, is that. And I, you know, to me, that's the ultimate woman to me is whichever woman you are, ultimately. I don't think that.
I think the ultimate woman is a person. The gender becomes secondary. That's what I would love. I would love for, I think that would be great if personality was more important than gender.
Yeah, see, that you're encouraging me tremendously. It's one of the things I say. If you want to read women who are interesting characters, go and read Superbia, because that's where you'll get
I really appreciate that. That, you know, that means a lot that you feel that way.
I do want to ask you one last thing. I was reading through some interviews you had done, and you had mentioned there was one book that you really wanted to bring back because this was a book that your mother, who was a who was not a comics reader, was reading, and that was Lois Lane. And when I was a kid, I read Lois Lane, you know, those things. So I was just curious to see about that. If you were going to bring Lois Lane back now, and of course, you know, I don't know if DC's listening or if you don't want to spoil something in case you got a pitch you want to do. But what would you do with Lois Lane these days?
I just would put Lois Lane back to work. I think marrying Superman was the worst thing that ever happened to her. I think she became more and more just, you know, his wife. I think she became less sexy. The same thing with Wonder Woman. I mean, I don't know any woman who thinks Wonder Woman is awesome. I think they think that she's cool as an idea. Mm-hmm. But I don't think any woman is like, oh, I want to look like Wonder Woman. Because they always draw her really butch. And I don't think that's a good choice. And I think for Lois, you know, my favorite Lois Lane covers are the ones from like the 60s and stuff. You know, she looks fabulous. She's really smart. And I think that she was able to compete in the superhero universe just by being a regular person with her. She was almost like Superman's Commissioner Gordon.
Hmm. Interesting.
That's what I would think would go back. And I also liked the love triangle potentially between Lois Lane and Lex Luthor and Superman. I thought that was interesting. I always liked that.
Well, they did those in the animated episodes of Superman, the animated series. We saw a lot of that.
Yeah, I liked that.
Now, it's interesting, you mentioned about Wonder Woman being drawn a certain way. I'll just tell you a real quick story Bruce Timm, who did a lot of those DC animated shows, Batman and Justice League and all those things, he said that they actually had to bring a woman in to show them how to draw women. Because when they were originally drawing women, they drew them very butch. It looked like, you know, the old, like we were saying before, like a man with certain female appendages added on. And so they had to actually bring in a female artist, and she showed them how to draw the female figure.
That's hilarious. Wow.
And I found that – see, I just think women are the lower class, unfortunately, when it comes to comics and television and movies and stuff like that. So I just hope the Superbia will help bring women up several levels so that you can actually be real people.
That's wonderful. I really hope that that's true. And the fact that you feel Superbia is something that could maybe do that makes me feel really nice. It makes me feel like myself and Russell and the whole team are doing – what we're supposed to do.
Yeah, that's really great. Any other projects you're working on that you'd like us to know about?
Well, this is the ongoing, you know, and actually I would like to say that an ongoing is far more work than one could ever imagine. Because it's the speed and the schedule you have to keep up with. That's what's surprising. And also, I'm really putting a lot of my efforts into my two web shows, Beyond the Trailer, which covers movies, and also Think About the Ink, which I launched after, regrettably, being fired from Marvel as their host and writer of The Watcher. Rich Johnson over at Bleeding Cool said, you know, there's a place for you here. And so I launched my own show, which he presents on Bleeding Cool. And the reaction of viewers has been really wonderful and just so fantastic. And so I really put a lot of effort into that show as well to make sure that it maintains its standards.
Very cool. Well, to access them, you go to the Bleeding Cool site?
Oh, well, you can find Think About the Ink on Bleeding Cool, but both are on YouTube.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the name of them again is?
Beyond the Trailer is the movie one, and Think About the Ink is the comic book one. And then today, because there are so many movies about comic books, you know, they have a lot of crossover. You know, Beyond the Trailer covers some comic book stuff. And full. I hope people check them out and like them. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it, Grace. It's great to talk with you. Hopefully we'll get to talk with you again sometime, because you've got me very encouraged about the future of comics and women in comics.
Well, I would really like for you to tell me what you think of the first issue, and I really love feedback coming from YouTube. I love being able to talk to people about, you know, the material. So I would also like to mention that we have – you can not only find all of us, myself and Russell, on Twitter. We set up a Facebook page. You can just look up Grace Randolph's Superbia. And then you can like it. We have a couple of the covers up there. And so it's just a way for people to be able to talk.
Very cool. Well, Grace, a lot of success moving forward. And I just look forward to all the stuff you're doing. It's great fun. And it sounds like you're going to be getting a lot of my money coming in the next couple
Thanks,
months.
Wayne. None of it would matter if people didn't enjoy it and have a good time. So I'm really glad to hear that you're liking the stuff.
Well, thanks so much.
together from the cosmic reaches of the universe. Here in this great hall of justice are the most powerful forces of good ever assembled.
It's Wayne's Comic Review.
Dedicated to truth, justice, and peace for all mankind.
Let's have a look at this week's comics. The highlights of the week for me were two powerful graphic novels, one called Granville Bête Noire, which is done by Brian Talbot, a great artist and writer who does a lot of these things. This is the latest in a series of Granville graphic novels that he's done, and it's full color, hardcover, great book. It has Detective Inspector LeBrock from Scotland Yard, who in the Granville universe is a badger, and we see a lot of anthropomorphization in the book. Lots of fun, interesting art, great thing, well done, and that came out this week. Then there's also Rust, Secrets of the Cell, which I really liked. Very different from the previous graphic novel in the sense that it's done in a duotone, and by that I mean black with another color, a yellowish brown, and it's a smaller size, but it's still hardcover. It's definitely great. You need to read the first volume, Rust Visitor in the Field, in order to get all the good stuff. But what I really like about Rust is that it's like Mouse Guard in the way that we have a young boy, a small robot who's in the shape of a boy, and he takes on a lot of things much bigger than he is. And I like that about it. I really pull for the character. He's involved with an interesting family, and there's a lot going on, so I really highly recommend this Arcana graphic novel. The New 52 has included a lot of great things, including Batman number 15, which continues the shocking death of the family event. And that also includes Batgirl and Batman and Robin. Next, I enjoyed Frankenstein Agent of Shade as the main character continues to delve into the Rotworld event. Demon Knights by Paul Cornell has Merlin, Lucifer, and a connection to Stormwatch from the past that join up before the team enters what could be their final battle. Green Lantern Corps shows the Third Army continuing to rise. Legion Lost has the Lost Legionnaires deciding if they're willing to sacrifice millions in order to save billions. Superboy continues the Hell on Earth event. Then Deathstroke has a long-dead memory from Slade's past resurfacing and looking for revenge. The Ravagers number 7 features the return of Warblade and Rose Wilson. Suicide Squad shows the continuation of Harley's rather unpleasant reunion with the Joker. This is also part of the death of the family. Team 7 features the mysterious Essence, joining the team's battle against the Heart of Darkness, known as the Black Diamond. And Grifter has the Hero and Voodoo fighting the Suicide Squad. Also out this week of note are Batman Arkham Unhinged number 9, Before Watchmen Dr. Manhattan number 3, Before Watchmen Rorschach number 3, Green Lantern the Animated Series number 9, and Saucer Country number 10. From Boom is the wonderful Superbia number 2, which is definitely worth getting, as we talked with Grace earlier. Then from Red 5 is Atomic Robo, Flying She-Devils of the Pacific, number 5 of 5. Image has Walking Dead, number 105. And Valiant has Bloodshot, number 6. And those are the books that came out this week. Okay, it's time for this week's news and previews, and back as always is Gianluca Glazer. How are you doing this week, Gianluca?
I'm doing well.
Good, good. What kind of news should we be aware of this week?
There's a lot of news this week. Right now, Diamond has announced the top products for November. Mm. It's interesting. Marvel has taken a great lead over DC in November, due in small part to the Marvel Now relaunch.
Okay.
So, for retail market share, Marvel had 34% to DC's 30%, and in unit market share, Marvel had a whopping 40.23% to DC's 33.25%. So, you know, people complain about these big event kind of comics, you know, but they work. Obviously, mm-hmm. DC took the lead with Marvel with the New 52. Mm-hmm. And was either neck and neck or ahead most of the time. Mm-hmm. And now Marvel hasn't had this kind of a lead over DC since before that event. So Marvel Now obviously helped them a lot. Mm-hmm. For the top 10, Marvel pretty much dominated except for Batman number 14, which was number 2, and mm-hmm. Justice League 14, which was number 9. The rest of the top 10 were all Marvel titles. Another interesting thing about this, too, is that, you know, it was announced by IDW that their My Little Pony Friendship is Magic had sold like over, I can't remember, but it was like over 100,000 copies.
Hmm.
So this didn't make the top 10. So you have to assume that everything here in the top 10 is over 100,000 copies.
Wild. Wow, that's interesting. See, I'm fascinated because this is a good thing, I think, when the industry, when DC and Marvel are neck and neck, or at least back and forth like this. Now, Marvel now is not going to, I don't think it'll continue like this for month to month.
No.
But I think it's good now that DC and Marvel, you know, they can kind of buck each other once in a while.
Sure thing.
Now, any other things about graphic novels and good things like that?
Yeah, well, obviously no big surprise, but the graphic novel The Walking Dead, Volume 7, 17, was number one in the charts. Boom Studios made a big appearance at number three with their first volume collection of Adventure Time.
Oh, cool.
So that's done very well for them. You know, you had like... Basically, you had like a lot of Vertigo titles too that were in the top 10, such as Fables, Ferris, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo was number five in the top 10 graphic novels raids. Walking Dead Volume 1 still high up there, number 8.
Yeah.
So, interesting stuff. Just for a little bit of other stats. You know, sales for graphic novels and comics were down from October, and they were up for comics, but down in graphic novels compared to a year ago in November. But one thing to note that November last year had an extra week, so
makes sense.
Interesting stuff. Things are still up though year to date versus last year.
See that's over. So this is up over. Last December, okay, so that's interesting. I'm just curious because last December was when DC had the New 52 was percolating. So that's interesting.
Yeah, you know, just to give you a top the list of the top 10 comics. All New X-Men number one was number one. Batman 14 number two. Captain America number one was number three. Deadpool title you don't normally see high up on the charts. Deadpool number one was number four. Indestructible Hulk number one, number five. Iron Man number one was ranked six. Fantastic Four number one was number seven. Uncanny Avengers number two was number eight. Justice League 14, as I mentioned before, is number nine. And then Thor, God of Thunder number one was number 10.
Now, interesting. Now, put on your predictions hat as we get into December, how do you think it's going to shake out? Do you think that Marvel will continue to have eight out of the top 10, or will it be more, you know, like 50-50, or what do you think?
Well, you know, Marvel Now initiative is spread out over, like, a number of months, as opposed to the New 52, which launched 52 titles all in the same month.
Mm-hmm.
So I still see, you know, Marvel continuing to have a lead over DC. Maybe not as big, but... still going to be pretty big. You know, unless DC does like another event, like they had their zero issue event, which, you know, pushed them ahead, further ahead, you know, earlier this year. Unless DC does something similar. And again, I know we complain about these kind of event, you know, things, but the fact is that they do make money.
Yep. Yeah, it is always thus. Whenever you do something special, which is why sometimes you'll, in Marvel or in DC, you'll have this big events going on, three of them in the same month.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what happens. Yeah. It's just amazing to me. I guess it's good though. It keeps the paper copies selling as opposed to digital. So
sure, absolutely, and I'm sure digital sales are big for these as well too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did you read it? By the way, did you get a chance to read any of the Marvel Nows?
You know, I'm not a big Marvel guy. I haven't read any of the Marvel Nows. If I do read a Marvel book, it's something older or something like a little, you know, it's obviously published by Marvel, but it's not like a, like it's more like an Icon book or something, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm like that too. I tend to read the what I call the fringe books. But I did read Captain America number one, and I did read Uncanny X-Men number one, and they're both by Rick Remender.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly. Now, I happen to really like the Captain America, so I'll be probably getting that where I didn't buy Captain America before. However, I was not really enthralled with Uncanny X-Men's 1 or 2, so I'm going to probably not continue on with that, although I'm sure it's going to be one of the bigger sellers. Yeah. It just didn't do much for me, but Captain America was interesting. He's tossed onto another world, and he's going to have to figure out how to survive and all this.
Yeah.
But, that's, of course, that's what Remender said he was going to do. He was going to make it more sci-fi. So it's interesting. Anyway, they're getting me to buy a couple more books than they had before. I'm sure a lot of people are buying a whole bunch more.
Yeah, Remender's a really talented guy. I mean, mm-hmm. he's got a really wicked sense of humor, and, you know, it's good to see him. He's I remember when he was announced as being Marvel exclusive, and, mm-hmm. you know, before he was just doing, you know, Punisher, and now he's moved up, and he's handling, like, the top-tier books there.
Yeah, I want to be able to interview him at some point because he's got a lot of fun things to do. I'm sorry he's off Venom because I'm probably going to drop that book very shortly. I read
right.
the first one without him, and it wasn't nearly the book that it was when he was there. So, mm-hmm. But I'd still like to talk to him. He sounds like a lot of fun to talk.
Cross your fingers, hopefully, early
yeah.
this year.
You never know.
I'll remember to hit him up.
Yeah, if you would, just to see if he's up for it. If he's a Marvel exclusive, you probably have to go through Marvel, unfortunately, which is a tough nut to crack.
All right. Anyway, more news coming up. Free Comic Book Day gold titles were announced.
Hmm.
Free Comic Book Day is, you know, on the first Saturday in May.
Mm-hmm.
Around this time, they announced the gold books. Here's a quick list of them. Ape Entertainment is doing a Sesame Street Strawberry Shortcake flipbook. Very funny because you have Elmo there on the front cover.
Mm-hmm.
And given all the latest news with Kevin Clash, you know, it's kind of, of course it's hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
You know, basically the solicit is Cookie Monster, the Count, Elmo, and Super Grover teach you about the magic of reading comics. While Strawberry Shortcake and Company participate in three adventures.
Hmm.
So, interesting stuff there. Would mm-hmm. be more interesting if Kevin Clash taught you, like, you know,
mm-hmm.
court litigations and non-disclosure agreements.
Mm-hmm. Talk about Disney and stuff like that. That would be fun.
Yes, it would be. Archie has the World of Archie Digest. No real big groundbreakers here, just introducing new readers to the antics of the Riverdale's favorite teens.
Mm-hmm.
Bongo Comics is offering a Bongo Comics free-for-all. Mm-hmm. Stars Jimbo, the quintessential juvenile delinquent, Bart, who becomes model citizen for a day, and little Homer and Maggie, who goes looking for happy little elves.
Mm-hmm.
Boom Studios, through their kids imprint Kaboom, is offering Kaboom Summer Blast, a 48-page showcase for Adventure Time, Peanuts, Regular Show, never heard of that one, Greatness Warriors.
Oh, wait a minute, Regular Show is a cartoon on Cartoon Network.
Oh, okay, so there's, you know, that's smart considering Adventure Time's a big hit for them.
Yeah, yeah.
Bravest Warriors, Garfield, and Ice Age. In addition, it will include brand new surprises.
Okay.
Dark Horse has a Star Wars Captain Midnight Avatar book. The Star Wars will feature fan favorites Darth Vader and Boba Fett. Captain Midnight previews a forthcoming series about a missing superhero. And Avatar The Last Airbender finds Mai dealing with a broken heart.
Hmm.
Interesting stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely get the most out of Star Wars.
Yeah, yeah.
Marvel and DC are very secretive with their books. Marvel is just basically top secret, and DC is only giving a title, basically Superman Special Edition. But other than that, they are both pretty mum in terms of that. Oh, another thing to note while going through these is that normally in years past, there's only been 10 gold titles,
mm-hmm.
usually being the case. This year, for the first time, there's 12. So demand is growing. A lot of licenses are snatched up by a lot of people because these are all like for kids, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's a all age kind of mm-hmm. event.
Now the one thing I do see is the Superman Special Edition. Of course, that makes me think of the fact that sure. Scott Snyder and Jim Lee are going to be doing that Superman. So I'll bet you that's going to be part of this.
Absolutely, and then you also, you know, Zack Snyder has the Man of Steel movie coming out as well.
Right. Right.
So I'm going to definitely capitalize on that. IDW is giving readers the all-age Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles animated adventures. That's going to be based off of the TV series by Nickelodeon. Image Comics is appealing to the older readers. I mentioned before, you know, how it's kind of like an all-age thing. Well, you want to keep the kids away probably from this one. It's the Walking Dead Free Comic Book Day 2013 special. It's, of course, Robert Kirkman with art by Charlie Adlard and Cliff Rathburn. It's going to have a new Tyrese short story and issues reprinting short stories featuring the Governor, Michonne, and Morgan. And it's not going to be in trades, so it's going to be probably very sought after.
I bet you it'll end up in the hardcovers, though, eventually, when they do those great big hardcovers.
Well, they promised. They said they're not going to be in any trades.
Yeah, I don't believe that for a second.
Paper Cuts has the Smurfs. So you got that going on. United Plankton. I don't know who they are, but Bongo usually does SpongeBob comics. So maybe this is Bongo, or maybe the SpongeBob people had their own different publisher, because they only allow one publisher per gold. So maybe this is a way around it. But it's the SpongeBob Comics Freestyle Funnies. So it's a collection of SpongeBob comics. And then I mentioned last week about Viz Media getting the Ugly Doll license. Well, Viz Media has their Ugly Doll comics and other stuff book.
I noticed that the cover looks very familiar. It looks like the old Superman covers from when he's carrying the car up above him.
That gets spoofed a lot. You know, IDW's Popeye did a version of that as well, too, recently.
Very true. Now, you notice a lot of these, as I look back over them, are children's-oriented.
Of course. It's an all-age event. And, you know, you're going to see some more for older readers in the silver sections when those are announced. But anything that's picked for gold, the way it works is that people participating in Free Comic Book Day, the retailers have to order a certain amount of gold for the event. But they could order any amount of silver books that they want. They could completely not order a silver book if they wanted to, but most likely they do order at least some. So these are requirements. They have to spend a certain amount of money split evenly among the gold books. Originally used to be 10. Now it's been expanded to 12. So they usually pick, of those gold books, they pick those very all-age-friendly books. Or in the case of Walking Dead, Walking Dead's probably the only book that could get away with that, considering the demand for it right now.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Did you ever hear, by the way, did you ever hear any word on how the Halloween thing went? They had a Halloween kind of a free comic book day set up. I never heard any word about it, and that usually means it didn't do as well as
you know, I know they were doing, like, short, you know, kind of like these little mini Halloween comics. I honestly never heard any results or anything like that. Usually, there's usually post-press after Free Comic Book Day announcing what a big success it was.
Yeah. Well, we'll find out if they have another one of those in 2013, then we'll know it was successful enough for them to do it again.
Yeah.
If they don't do it again, it wasn't a big deal.
Yeah.
So, interesting.
A couple of interesting news out of DC. Actually, there's a few interesting news. Jim Zubiak is announced as the new writer for Birds of Prey, starting with issue number 18. He's going to be working with the current artist, Romano Molinar. He's taking over for the departing Dwayne Zerzinski.
Dizzy for you to say.
Yes. Bless you. But yeah, I mentioned that last week about how there's going to be some changes in writers coming up. This is a cool story for me. I love Harlan Ellison, great sci-fi writer. You know, with Ray Bradbury gone, there's not a whole lot of them left. DC Comics will release Harlan Ellison's Seven Against Chaos graphic novel written by Ellison with art by Paul Chadwick next summer. Similar theme to Seven Samurai and The Magnificent Seven, it's a graphic novel that tells the story of seven alien warriors who must find the source of chaos, unraveling the fabric of reality and defeat it.
The last time we had a Harlan Ellison book, it was done by Image, I thought. Or IDW, one of those.
I can't remember, you know.
It was like Phoenix Rising, I think it was, and they had...
I bought all that, and they even put it out as a trade. I bought that as well. But I'm fascinated that DC's actually picking that up. That's an interesting move.
Yeah, DC's done Harlan Ellison books before. Harlan Ellison was a supervising producer for the 80s Twilight Zone. And I remember they did a book with art by Neil Adams that was an adaptation of one of the stories he wrote.
Interesting.
Yeah. Bad news, though, at DC, is that Karen Berger is leaving DC in Vertigo in March 2013.
Is she retiring or what?
You know, there's no real details in regards to why, whether she was let go, whether she decided to leave. I mean, obviously, she's been around since 1979. You know, she headed Vertigo. Many people thought that she should be in Bob Harris's spot. You know, she should be running things, you know, or at least where Dan Didio is. You know, titles in her portfolio include Sandman, Hellblazer, V for Vendetta, Fables, Preacher, The Invisibles, 100 Bullets, Why the Last Man, and American Vampire.
Yep. Yeah, so there's a lot of successful stuff. She's been there. She's been there since 79.
Yeah,
that's like what, 35 years?
Almost. I mean, I was born in 1978. Mm-hmm. I'm 34 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, it's just crazy. You know, you would imagine someone like that would be running DC.
Yeah.
She, I guess, was running the Vertigo line. And it kind of gives you the state of how Vertigo is. Hellblazer is going to be ending with issue 300. They're still going to, I guess, have new titles. Snyder and Lemire are going to have, like, miniseries there still. Yeah, Sweet Tooth is ending as well, too, for Lemire.
Yeah. I'm going to be so sorry when that's done. But in a way, he'll end it really well, I'm sure. But
yeah.
But, you know, with Vertigo, I don't buy much Vertigo stuff. I buy a lot of DC. I'm always interested when you go to the DC panels like at cons, they always include Vertigo, and then there's lots of enthusiasm for the DC line. Then when they get to the Vertigo, it gets kind of quiet.
Oh,
you know?
Vertigo's so great. I mean, you know, obviously you had Swamp Thing. You had the original Animal Man.
Mm-hmm.
It's just obviously a little more adult, you know, than the regular DC line.
Mm-hmm. So I find it hard to pick out the good stuff. It's DC, I have a fair sense of what's going to be good and what isn't. And I can normally tell, like, the war comics always. Although I like them, they never go over well. I'm always kind of interested to see. With Vertigo, it's very tough. I bought Joe the Barbarian, which was done by Grant Morrison, and it was through Vertigo.
Yeah.
And there were several Vertigos that I've tried. And every once in a while, I sample one, and I'm always kind of turned off by it. So I it just depends, I guess. Maybe my tastes aren't adult enough.
Well, American Vampire is Vertigo.
Oh, yeah. Well, I get that every month. That's a good one.
You know, it's basically less superhero-y. And,
yeah.
You know, there are maybe some supernatural stuff like Hellblazer.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, it's more grittier, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
Other interesting news, IDW Publishing, in conjunction with Hazmat Studios and Blind Spot Pictures, is producing an official Iron Sky movie tie-in graphic novel, scheduled to appear in March. I've never heard about this Iron Sky movie, but...
I know a little about it, but not very much, so I guess this is part of the promotion.
So, yes, it's written by Mick Coe. I can't even pronounce the last name. Just look it up. The story is a prequel to the Finnish, German, Australian sci-fi film and uses humor and steampunk sensibilities to tell the story of a battle against the Nazis who fled to the moon after World War II. In addition, it relates to readers how Wolfgang Kurzfleisch, he's like actually easier to pronounce than the writer, became Der Überführer. Drawn and colored by Jerry Cassell and Amin Amat, who worked on Code Word Geronimo, Iron Sky will be 104 pages in length and include original pen art by Miguel Angel Abad and Darren Douglas.
Well, that's interesting. More than I knew about that stuff. That actually sounds somewhat interesting to me.
It definitely is. Other really weird, interesting news here. Dark Horse Comic is going to be collecting in 6 issues a digital series, and this is based off of a live-action web series called Husbands. It's going to be a graphic novel in March 2013. This is kind of, you know, a little racy here, and I guess, you know, the Supreme Court's weighing in on gay marriage, so, you know, it's kind of timely, I guess.
Man,
it's an 80-page collection, retails for $14.99. Based on, I mentioned, the live-action web series, Husbands is a story of a professional basketball player, Brady Kelly, and tabloid sensation Cheeks. They call him Cheeks.
I don't have to wonder why.
Anyway, I don't know. But advocates for gay marriage and equal rights, the couple wind up married for a wild weekend in Vegas and find themselves caught up in a series of literary genre adventures following a magical wedding gift. Interesting stuff there.
The question I always have on these things is, do these things, I mean, socially relevant comics, do they sell well? Are they done just for perception?
You know, there's going to be, like, a fan base for it, obviously. You know, a lot of women, which Dark Horse appeals to with Buffy the Vampire Slayer, you know, will also probably pick this up as well, too. You know, it's kind of weird. You know, you have that kind of audience, and then you have actually a large male audience for My Little Pony on IDW's side. You have them, they're called bronies. I'm not a brony.
No, I never was much for that.
It's funny.
Interesting.
And then this is why I don't work in comic books anymore in marketing. But here's an interesting story, and it just tells you kind of the nature of the business, especially the marketing business. Okay, first of all, before I tell this story, let me tell you this. IDW is looking for another marketing person again.
Okay,
if this sounds like deja vu, if you ever followed us when we were on our other, you know, things like Comic Book, it is because exactly a year ago, IDW was looking for a marketing person again to relocate to San Diego. I threw my hat into the ring. They turned me down for some editor, which is usually the case. We need a marketing person. Let's hire an editor. And then 1 year later, they're back asking the same thing. And Bleeding Cool had both stories, you know, which is how I found out. So, you know, you don't have a very big lifespan, it seems like. You know, maybe heads of marketing, people like Dirk over at IDW do. But Archie Comics, here's the story that made me go into this spiel, has promoted Stephen Scott to Director of Publicity and Marketing. The company announced Tuesday. Scott, who joined the company last year after a stint at Marvel, is taking notice here. He's somebody who had a stint at Marvel. Doesn't sound very long. Is taking the position formerly occupied by Adam Tracy, the Wizard and UGO.com vet, who started in September. Okay? He started in September, the director of marketing, at Adam Tracy. So September, October, November, and we're in the beginning of December here. That's 4 months I'm counting. If I'm counting December as a full month, which it really isn't. So really, let's say 3.5 months to be accurate. So after the illustrious 3.5 month career of Adam Tracy, and no offense to Adam Tracy, you know, you have Stephen Scott taking over. It's kind of a very, you know, fast moving business.
Yeah. Well, he won't get a Karen Berger Award for that.
No, you're not going to get a gold watch.
No.
Tracy was hired in August to fill the void left by the departure of Alex Segura, who, to be fair, Alex had been with Archie for like a few years, you know, and he moved on to DC. So that is kind of why, you know, considering the length of time that I had as director of marketing at Radical Publishing, you know, it's almost like a lifetime achievement award.
That's right. So marketing directors don't have, if you want to be able to move around and see the world, be a marketing director.
Make very little money, move around, because the way it works is this. A lot of publishing companies is like, I need someone with fresh new ideas. I'm going to take this guy, he's been doing great work, you know, over at Archie, and I'm going to have him on board, you know, just as an example of a publishing company. So after a few years, it's the same thing. I need fresh new ideas.
Goodness.
You know, basically, you can only, like, do so many different things with so many different properties that you have, you know? You know, Chip Mosier is an exception. He's somebody who always kind of had, like, fresh new ideas all the time. Mm-hmm. But every so often, and he ended up leaving for Comixology after a few years at Boom. But the whole thing is that, you know, after a while, your fresh new ideas don't become so fresh and they don't become so new.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, the publishing company is always looking at the grass being greener on the other side and saying, oh, well, you know, I like what they're doing. Let's steal their marketing guy.
Well, I don't know. It's this links into the whole comics industry as a whole, you know.
Sure.
I think that marketing is a tough nut these days. People are struggling, you know. It has a lot to do with the stores.
Yes, it is.
So as anybody who understands stores has a leg up, I think. But even then, with digital coming on, a marketing director is going to have a rough.
Yeah.
So it's like Marvel. Marvel did this audio thing on Marvel Now. I guess that seemed to work out since the numbers were up high.
Mm-hmm.
They did radio, and I was like, radio? Why radio? But that's kind of, you know, it's going to be tough to do these things. You'd be better off spending money in local cable markets, you know, because
yeah.
that's a lot cheaper. Anyway.
So that's it for the news for me. Do you have any stories?
I've got two interesting little tidbits for me. Is that one of my favorite writers, Paul Cornell from the UK, he's writing, remember we talked last time about Saucer Country, in which about a presidential election. He's actually not exclusive to DC. He's also writing Demon Knights, which is pretty good. I like that book a lot. But he's not exclusive to DC, so he's going to be taking over a Wolverine comic over in Marvel.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's going to be working with Alan Davis, so that's going to start in March. So it's one of two, actually, books to focus on Wolverine. One's called Savage Wolverine, unlike Savage Hawkman.
Sure.
Which, of course, and Marvel came up with it first, I'm sure. It was written by and illustrated by Frank Cho. Wolverine's going to have Paul Cornell and Alan Davis, and it's going to be more in line with traditional Wolverine solo books, with showing readers Logan, or James, as Cornell likes to call him, on his own adventures away from the X-Men or the Avengers. I can't imagine that he has any more free time. I mean, those got to be keeping him running. So he's interested in adding new layers to the character's world, new supporting characters, new villains, and exploring the idea of Wolverine as a protector rather than a hunter, which I don't think that readers are going to like. They like the hunter.
Yeah.
So we'll see. That's what Salvage Wolverine, I'm sure, is going to be a more hunter, so he's got to do a different tack. But anyway, I find that interesting that Cornell's going to do a Marvel book, and he's actually moved up the ladder. He's doing a Wolverine book, which is, you know, top of the food chain.
Right.
So that's going to go. There was another story that really fascinated me. We talked a little bit about The Walking Dead, and the mid-season finale took place recently.
Yes.
There was a woman who was shot in Long Island after arguing with her boyfriend about the show.
Yeah.
I found that funny. I always, you know, these kind of stories always interest me. There was a gentleman by the name of Jared Gurman, who was 26, and his girlfriend, Jessica Gelderman, argued after the show aired about the relative plausibility of it, specifically the likelihood of a military mishap resulting in the release of a virus.
Right.
Which is the show's basic premise, although we don't know that 100% for sure. Gurman, of course, believed it's possible. The girlfriend did not. Argument continued until the next day when they got back together again, and the girlfriend tried to calm him down, and there was a shot with a .22 caliber semi-automatic rifle.
Jeez.
Which, you know, the question, of course, is did the show or the comic inspire him to do that? Probably not. He probably was just a guy that liked guns, so
yeah.
What's the big deal with that?
On that argument, by the way.
Yeah.
I think he had the final word.
Yeah, well, she can't say anything right now. She's probably still in the hospital with the shot. So.
Yeah.
He's been, of course, he's been arraigned for with second degree attempted murder.
Yeah.
And he's in custody without bail, so they're not going to continue this argument unless there's a glass wall between them. So that'll be the best way to do it at this point. And those are the news items that I was interested in.
All right.
Okay, let's move into the previews. What books are you looking forward to coming?
So this is for December 19th. Interesting list of titles here. Dark Horse has Black Beetle Night Shift number 0, one shot, coming out.
Mm-hmm.
A Ghost Omnibus Volume 3 trade paperback if you have $25 to spend.
Mm.
And then new series number 13, issue number 1, goes on sale.
Okay.
All right. On DC Comics, there is Batwoman number 15.
Yay.
On sale, along with a variant cover. Before Watchmen, Moloch number 2. Mm-hmm. With its various variants and combo pack editions. Mm-hmm. This is interesting. I have no idea what this is. There's no price for it either, but it's DC, the new 52, King of the Nerds store bag promotional item.
You know, I bet you what that is, you know, when you buy your books at a store, they put them into a bag.
Sure.
And some stores, like there's a store that I go to up in northeastern Pennsylvania called Comics on the Green, and they buy green bags to put them in, kind of advertising. I think what this is, and of course I could be completely wrong on this, I'm just a guess here, but I think it's a bag that they give out to promote DC, so when you buy your stuff, they stick them in this bag, and it promotes DC, and I'm the King of the Nerds or something.
I want my King of the Nerds store bag. Demand it.
I'm not convinced this is a wise move, but I think that's what it is.
I got to see this bag.
Yeah.
It better live up to the hype.
Yeah.
Anyway, based off of Tarantino's upcoming film, Django, the D is silent, Django Unchained, number 1, goes on sale. There's a Jim Lee variant cover as well as the Movie Key Art regular cover edition. Kind of pricey. It's a $5 book.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a 6-issue miniseries. we were talking about Vertigo earlier. Hellblazer, number 298. Only 2 more issues to go after that. Goes mm-hmm. on sale.
Mm-hmm.
And He-Man Masters Universe, number 5, goes on sale.
Mm.
On IDW's side, they got a new artist edition. Gil Kane's The Amazing Spider-Man artist edition. It's only $95.
Is that all?
Yeah. Oh, usually only. But usually these artist edition books usually set you back like $120. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
They have Judge Dredd number 2 on sale. Mm-hmm. Magic the Gathering, Path of Vengeance number 2. Basically, this is the story of one of the King of the Nerds who found out that this guy stole his Magic the Gathering cards. So he goes on a path of vengeance. Get them back.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the follow-up series, Magic the Gathering, The Spell Thief, number 3. Mm-hmm. This is the story about how the King of the Nerds put sleeping pills and got back his Magic the Gathering collection cards, as well as stealing, you know, the other guy's other cards just for good measure.
Mm-hmm. These comics are about 10 years too late. I think Magic the Gathering was really big back about a decade ago. It still goes on, but not with the same fervor it did. They should have done a comic like a decade ago.
Yes. There's Mars Attacks, number 6, goes on mm-hmm. sale.
Mm-hmm.
And I was mentioning about My Little Pony. My Little Pony Friendship is Magic, number 1, second printings for both covers A through F.
Wow.
As well as the second printing complete box set, which collects A through F.
Wow.
And then as well as My Little Pony Friendship is Magic number 2.
Mm.
Now, this is a 4-issue miniseries, but I'm pretty sure they'll probably do an ongoing after this.
Mm-hmm.
So you have covers A, B, and C, and then you have retailer incentive covers A, B, and C as well, too.
Wow.
Jill Thompson does one of the retail incentive covers. So I mentioned before, obviously it didn't make the top 10 of last month, November. So I got to wonder what those numbers are once they're released, how many units these top 10 mm-hmm. did.
Really?
And then you spoke with J.K. Woodward a while ago.
Right.
His Star Trek, The Next Generation, Doctor Who, Assimilation, Volume 2, Issue Number 8 of 8, the final issue of this second miniseries, goes on sale.
Wow, that's been a fun book. It's been a real pleasure to read. It's actually called Assimilation Squared, but they can't do the superscript on the internet, so the two should be superscripted. But everybody says it's Volume 2 or Assimilation 2 or something like that, but it's actually Assimilation Squared, which is
there you go.
They said they're never going to do that again because it didn't work out.
No. And then if you like your classic books, IDW has you covered. There's the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Classic Volume 3 trade paperback.
Mm.
And then if you got $60 to spare and have enough shelf space for a big hardcover book, there is Woodwork, which is a collection of Wally Wood's work from 1927 to 1981.
Wow, I liked his art.
Oh, I love his
very
stuff.
Good. Very dynamic.
I love his science fiction stuff for EC Comics.
Yeah. Yeah, he did a lot of different stories. Of course, I don't think they're going to have it in there, but he did a very X-rated Superman and Wonder Woman, or was it Lois Lane? I can't remember. Story.
Yeah.
So we won't discuss that any further.
Okay. Look it up, kid.
Yeah.
Image Comics. You have Chew Volume 6, Space Cakes, trade paperback. Grant Morrison's Happy number 3. It's a 4-issue miniseries, so issue number 3 goes on sale. Two covers for it. Saga, Brian K. Vaughan's, issue number 8 goes on sale. And then, Where is Jake Ellis? Number 2. What was the first miniseries? What was it? Who is Jake Ellis?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so now Where is Jake Ellis?
Okay.
Marvel side, Amazing Spider-Man, number 698. Getting close to the end of that series before.
Well, that's a second printing variant cover.
Oh, that's right. Never mind. And then Castle, A Calm Before the Storm. I believe that's based off of the TV series. Daredevil number 21 with Mark Wade. And then the final last issue of Uncanny X-Force number 35. You have an Alex Maleev cover and a Julian Totino. Julian Totino Todesco.
Yeah.
Edition cover.
Yeah.
Should have just stuck with his middle name.
Yeah.
Then Venom number 28, which you recently dropped.
Yes. And well, yeah, I'm still looking at it, but I'm not convinced it's going to be good.
Yes.
But we'll see. We'll see. Anything else?
That was already a mouthful for me.
Okay, all right. Let me run over a couple of things that I like. Take my car and run over a couple of things that
I'm
interested in. Marvel doesn't have much for me this time around.
Sure.
I think we got to move into Image before I really get excited about things. Thief of Thieves number 11, which is interesting, and also from the Kirkmanverse is Super Dinosaur number 16, which amazes me that that continues on. I'm also amazed that Haunt number 28 is out.
Yes.
I'm very amazed by that. Now, Jonathan Hickman is still doing, which seems to be taking forever, America's Got Power.
Yeah,
they don't have
to say. That's a long time coming.
Yeah, that they don't have a timetable, apparently, but they do have powers.
Yes.
So that's eventually that'll come. I'm still waiting for the trade on that. It's too late now for me to go back and get the originals. I'll wait for the trade on that. Yes. Also, Star Trek number 16, the ongoing, is still going. That's going to gear up, I'm sure, as we get closer to the movie, which we saw a trailer of recently. The very first trailer for Star Trek Into the Darkness is to come out, so that'll be interesting. Mm-hmm. Another great book is Locke and Key Omega number 2 of 7.
Uh-huh.
Really, really, really good. I really like that book. I'm going to be sorry when it's over, in a sense.
Sure.
I wanted to mention, too, from DC Comics, of course, there's a bunch that I really like.
Sure.
Young Justice number 23, thank goodness the book's coming out because the show isn't on the air.
Uh-huh.
Oh, Wonder Woman 15, Sword of Sorcery 3, Supergirl 15, Red Hood and the Outlaws, Nightwing, and Legion of Superheroes, which you're talking about changing writers. They're changing writers. Paul Levitz is leaving and Keith Giffen is taking over.
Oh, cool.
So that'll be interesting to see. And then JSA, The Liberty Files, The Whistling Skull, number 1 of 6, with Tony Harris covers. It's coming out. They're advertising those in the current books right now.
Uh-huh.
Green Lantern, number 15, of course. DC Universe Presents, which is number 15. That'll be a good one.
Yeah.
Catwoman, Blue Beetle, Birds of Prey.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be this for DC. As far as Dark Horse goes, the Game of Thrones is starting to gear up again because the show should be coming back on in a couple months. There is the Star Wars books are going too. They've got them as miniseries rather than ongoing books right now. Star Wars Agent of the Empire, Hard Target, number 3 of 5. Let's make these titles as long as we can.
Sure.
Star Wars Dawn of the Jedi, The Prisoner of Bogan, number 2 of 5.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, if you like Star Wars, The Omnibus, The Clone Wars, Volume 3, The Republic Falls, trade paperback for $25. And I think that's all there is. Any other things that we should discuss before we call it quits?
No.
Okay, and on that note, we call it quits for this week's News and Previews. As always, thanks, John Lucas. We'll talk with you again next week.
Thank you very much, Wayne. Looking forward to it.
And that's a wrap for this episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Be sure to be back next week when I have a great interview with Steve Pugh, the artist on Animal Man for DC. We have a great time talking about his projects past and present. But until then, keep reading your comics.